Rod Oram, good morning to you.
Morena, Catherine.
Goodness me, it was a big year and this one is shaping up to be a very big one too. Let's start off with an overview of the state of the economy at the start of the year, Rod.
The mood in business is actually remarkably buoyant. So the most recent survey out is by NZIER, a quarterly one, and it showed that a net 1% of respondents expect demand to be lower over the coming months. What this means is that they're netting out those who have a positive outlook versus a negative outlook. So given all that's been going on in the economy, that's pretty good. But then if you look at the survey that in its regular series that ANZ Bank did and published just before Christmas, the numbers are even stronger. And I stress that this isn't a downturn since Christmas. These are different methodologies. So the net score there for companies' views of their own prospects, which is probably the more accurate view that companies have versus the economy as a whole, it was the highest positive score since March 2018. And it's the first time that the score for the economy as a whole from these respondents was net positive for the first time since 2017. So in other words, the message here is from these surveys that confidence is running higher than it has been for several years, even, you know, pandemic, the start of the pandemic. And then across overall activity, investment intentions, hiring intentions, in the ANZ survey, those are all net positives. And looking across the sectors, they only look at five, so this isn't in any great detail. Construction is by far the most bullish, followed by services, manufacturing and retail. Agriculture was the least positive. It's a mixed bag there because the price on global markets for dairy products is good. It's less good for meat. But still, agriculture is reasonably strong. And across all of those five categories reported good growth compared with a year ago. Now, very interestingly, though, there was one category of response which was a considerably negative score, and that was on the ease of credit. And indeed, profits are weaker in retail and manufacturing. The data shows strong in construction services and down in agriculture. But this measure would tend to suggest that banks are being cautious about lending to customers. But ANZ reckons that the factor lying behind this is probably the impending reimposition of loan-to-value ratios on mortgages, since many small and medium-sized enterprises finance themselves through their owners' home mortgages. So I don't think that that's an example of a systemic problem with finance, and I'll come back to the banks in a little while. But still, there's lots of stresses and strains. And particularly in tourism, so it's going to be, and overseas education, and it's going to be really fascinating once we get through the peak of this summer tourism season to see how well the sector has adjusted to having strong domestic demand but non-existent overseas demand. Just one last point is that what the most recent data is showing us from the end of last year is that inflation is ticking up faster than expected. Now, it's still very moderate, but there are concerns there that inflation generated in the domestic economy was 2.8% year on year. And the strongest area there was rents for housing. And the price of imported goods only slipped slightly, reflecting difficulties getting supplies in many cases. So inflation is definitely something to watch here in the coming year. And overall, the message, though, is there's very little unused capacity in the economy, which requires, A, investment to build that and putting more people to work, but also it's potentially a driver of a little bit more inflation, that tightness of capacity.
You mentioned the LVRs, which, of course, are a Reserve Bank tool. It's had to navigate the anticipated effects of the same pandemic and then some unanticipated effects. Its suite of tools goes way beyond LVRs and way beyond, as we know, the cash rate. What do you think is its forward path with things like the quantitative easing, effectively the money printing, as we simplify it to? It gave itself significant scope to do a lot of that. It has done some. Is it likely to pull back on that now?
Yes, for a couple of reasons. The first one is that there is less need because the economy is performing better than expected. And so the view from the financial markets now is that the Reserve Bank won't be lowering its official cash rate below its current 0.25% early this year, which was the trajectory people were expecting back at the end of last year. And in now, it might not make a change until 2022. And at that point, it could be upwards. So it's quite a significant change in market sentiment and therefore the trajectory they expect from the Reserve Bank. Now, the of course, within the question of inflation, there is this chronic housing market inflation. And there have been some studies in recent days from some reliable sources showing that those housing prices could increase by another 25% over the next few years. But that, of course, is very much a task for the government to tackle rather than the Reserve Bank. And the government's been disappointing on that and now saying that it won't have anything new to say about increasing housing supply until it's done some work which it will complete and discuss in May, which is a long way off. Now, in terms of the Reserve Bank buying back bonds to create more money, this is the quantitative easing thing, that buyback of bonds peaked at $1.8 billion a week in April. And it's been up and down a bit since then. This week we're in now, will probably only be about $650 million. And as I say, there's two factors in play here. The first one is this relatively strong performance of the economy. But secondly, the Reserve Bank has an agreement with the government not to buy up more than 60% of the government bonds out there in the market, because obviously the Reserve Bank and the government want that market to keep functioning. They need bonds for people to buy and sell. And they're getting very close to that limit now. They're about 5 or so percentage points off that limit. So that's holding them back as well. But then the other thing, and this loops back to the banks themselves, the new program that the Reserve Bank got going late last year was funding for lending. And this was offering the banks the opportunity to borrow money at 0.25%, the cash rate, for a period of 3 years, in order that they have lots of money to lend on to businesses elsewhere in the economy. But so far, very little has been drawn down. $40 million on December the 11th and $1 billion on December 21st. And to put that in context, mortgage lending in November was $9 billion. Because what's going on is the banks have actually been very handily building up their deposits anyway, even with these very low, almost non-existent interest that they're paying on deposits. So that's why I don't think there really is any kind of funding problem in the economy, particularly with this level of confidence from companies about their prospects. And therefore, they're probably still being cautious about how much new money or new lending they will take on, because they're certainly very conscious that COVID could break out again, as we're now worrying about for the first time since late last year. And these are the sort of pushes and pulls in the economy, but overall very positive.
Now, another complicating factor for this government as it grapples with the imbalances, the housing market running wild, and the difficulties it's got in not only politically but economically, and also wanting to stave off the impacts of the pandemic economically. So, you know, some challenges there. The third big one for the year that's about to land, and we were discussing this yesterday in politics, is what the Climate Commission has to tell it about its pledges vis-a-vis climate, how far off it is and what it would take to meet them. What do you expect post that announcement, which we fully believe to be very, very sobering?
What we need to be very attuned to is the response across all of society. It's not just about business, although that's important. Because I don't believe it's anything of an exaggeration to say that 2021 is New Zealand's absolutely critical year for securing its future, because the carbon budgets and the carbon pathways that the Climate Change Commission is going to be proposing on February the 1st, and then the government has to decide by the end of the year what it's going to do will fundamentally determine the whole shape of the economy. And therefore, that's why I would argue that this is, you know, the central thing on which our future hinges from an economic point of view. And it will be very challenging, but I think it's really important to emphasise that there is lots we can do. And I think the level of confidence in a very economically rewarding way. And we can use this investment in responding to the climate crisis to work on a whole bunch of other things, whether it's sustainability more generally or producing creating a higher value economy that generates more wealth, but also dealing with inequalities. If we get the transitions right and make these fair transitions for across the economy, not just by sector or by province where there are particular problems, but demographically as well. So that's why I think that's the fundamental thing to be watching for right from the announcement next week, is how positively people are responding rather than saying, you know, panicking or being incredibly negative and saying this is too hard, we can't do it. This is just plain wrong. You see in the UK, for example, which has been on this journey with its own climate commission since 2008, the work it was doing last year on achieving zero emissions by 2050 in the UK and all the economic benefits that have flowed so far in the last decade of that, that they've been on that journey, that's the sort of encouragement that we need to be taking for ourselves.
So the process is the reporting happens on the 1st of Feb, and then it's all the way to the end of the year till we expect a government response.
Yes, but I want to emphasise the next stage after the announcement next week is the 6 weeks for public consultations. And I would just urge everybody to try and understand what's being proposed and respond to it. There are going to be meetings with public consultations, but there's also going to be the opportunity for people to put in submissions, whether it be individuals or in community groups or in business groups or the rest. And I would just hugely urge people to take a little bit of time to try to understand this and try to understand what their personal role can be on this journey, and therefore give some feedback to the Climate Commission. Then in May, the Climate Commission will produce its final recommendations, and that's when the government has until the end of the year to decide on those carbon budgets and all the policies that would then drive the pathways to those reductions. And of course, the other thing, though incredibly important, comes before then, which is the next UN climate negotiations are in Glasgow, November the 1st to 12th this year. And New Zealand, along with all other countries, is going to have to significantly increase its commitment beyond what it made in Paris, not just in terms of the level of reduction that we're offering to make, but actually lock that into position. Because at the moment, what we decided in Paris, or what we pledged in Paris, is not a binding commitment out to 2050. So that's the other thing that government will be factoring into all of this.
Well, the two segue in many ways, don't
yeah.
they? All right. You mentioned the UK. What have you seen from its similar commission that's actually changed, you know, led to significant change?
I think the most important factor is a real alignment by sectors, within sectors, around the goals. So, for example, the UK is far, far ahead on hydrogen as a potential replacement for domestic gas. The UK is very dependent on that for heating homes and hot water and the like. And similarly, it's had a spectacular success with offshore wind farms, with the cost of those and the falling dramatically and the efficiency of them rising very fast. So a surprising amount of electricity is now generated by renewable energy in the UK. So those are some examples, but I can't emphasise enough, it's the coordination that these sorts of structures that their commissions put in place and we're now working on, which is bringing people together and bringing players together in sectors to make stuff happen. I think that's the absolute key to it.
Now, the never-ending saga of the Tiwai Point smelter, you're left wondering, was this another grand bluff? Maybe, pardon the pun, maybe not. Maybe it has, everyone always wanted an orderly exit whenever and however it happened. Is this what this is, or is it just simply the price of aluminium's up again and so,
I think this really is the end of the road. I put a lot of work into this last year and, in fact, won the New Zealand Shareholders Association Journalism Award for my commentary on it. As I came to understand it, Rio Tinto is very, very focused indeed on hydroelectricity for smelting, but only where it owns and controls that hydroelectricity, because it needs that certainty, and it has that in spades, particularly in Canada. So it does want out, and this deal will keep the smelter running till the end of 2024. We don't know the extent to which Meridian, as the main electricity supplier, and Contact as the backup, have been making some concessions on price. And the government and the electricity companies are still working on reductions in transmission as well. But the plan is that it does actually end in 2024. So there is very active work between now and then with Rio Tinto, with the government, the community, Southland, Ngāi Tahu, the works, in terms of an orderly wind down of the plant, its closure, remediation of a pretty heavily polluted industrial site, and development of new opportunities for the electricity and for the community as a whole. And so I think now we need to keep everybody's feet to the fire on this over the next 4 years and make sure there is real action on those things so that we can get an orderly transition on this over the next 4 years.
Thanks very much, Rod. Rod Oram, business commentator.